Tune in and thrill to the best of the golden age of radio on Radio Yesteryear, weeknights at 9 p.m. Pacific on swingstreetradio.org.
Anything come what might, for the sake of having you near, in spite of a warning voice that comes in the night and repeats in my ear. Don't you know, little fool, you never can win. Use your mentality, wake up to reality. But each time I do, just the thought of you makes me stop before I begin. 'Cause I've got you under my skin.
from the city by the Golden Gate. This is KSSR DB San Francisco, Swing Street Radio. Where the big bands swing. It's time for Yesteryear, a look back at your favorite dramas, westerns, comedies, and musical variety shows from the golden age of radio. Here's your host for Yesteryear, Craig Roberts.
Well, thanks, Dave, and again, welcome to Yesteryear, the best of the golden age of radio. Coming up on today's program, it's The House in Cypress Canyon, starring Robert Taylor, a tale calculated to keep you in suspense. But first, it's the Bud Abbott and Lou Costello program with special guest stars, the Andrews Sisters. Abbott and Costello started in vaudeville before rising to stardom on radio and later the silver screen. Abbott and Costello were heard on radio for more than a decade, appearing as regulars first on the Kate Smith Hour, later the Chase and Sanborn Hour opposite Edgar Bergen and Charlie McCarthy, before beginning their own series, The Abbott and Costello Show. By 1942, the program had reached the top 15 in radio ratings, where it continued for the next 6 years. The Andrews Sisters first performed with Abbott and Costello in 1938 at the Steel Pier in Atlantic City, later co-starring with the boys on screen in Buck Privates, In the Navy, and Hold That Ghost. From April of 1945, it's the Abbott and Costello Show with special guest stars, the Andrews Sisters, on this edition of Yesteryear.
Major Bose, I miss the shadow nose, Fred Allen's alley folks, the laughter of Duffy's Tavern, Helen Trent, then we went to Can You Top This? Suspense in the Whistler sent those shivers up our spines. Uncle Don, I wish that he was on. Jack Armstrong, Burton, Marge, Amos, and Andy. I long to turn the dial again to hear the past to smile again. Radio, I miss you. Sodio, volio, dodio, do. Radio, I miss you so.
The Abbott and Costello program. Listen to the great rhythms of Will Osborne and his orchestra, the swingy singing of Connie Haynes, and that wide, wild, and woolly little wolf who, when asked to select the guest stars for our show tonight, telephoned the Andrews Sisters and said,
all right, Costello,
oh,
calm,
Abbott,
yourself.
Oh, boy, oh, Abbott.
Calm yourself,
oh.
Calm yourself. What's making you so nervous?
Oh, I just heard some terrific news, Abbott.
You did?
Hitler has a new secret weapon that can end the war in 5 minutes.
A secret weapon that can end the war in 5 minutes? What is it?
A long pole with a white flag on the end of it.
That's fine. That's fine. Now tell me, where were you all afternoon?
Oh, where was I?
Yes.
I went out and got my Uncle Artie Stebbins. Stebbins, I go already. It's so soon in the script, too. Please!
All right, now, just take it easy, please.
I just got my Uncle Artie Stebbins a job. It's a swell job, Abbott. He's a bookmaker.
Why, you dummy, he'll wind up in jail. Bookmaking is against the law. That's gambling.
Yeah, but he don't gamble, Abbott. He's a bookmaker in a bakery.
A bookmaker in a bakery?
Yeah, he takes orders for cakes. He's a cookie bookie.
Oh. Costello, I don't know which one is dumber, you or your Uncle Artie.
Well, I don't like to brag, Abbott, but I am. Of course, Artie is lazier than me.
No, you mean lazier than I.
Yes, sir. He's lazier than the both of us. My Uncle Artie only says his prayers one night a year.
Well, he must be lazy.
Yeah, the rest of the nights he just hops in bed and says, ditto.
Oh, let's forget your Uncle Artie. Now, there's something I want you to do for me, Costello.
Abbott, you know there's nothing I wouldn't do for you.
And there's nothing I wouldn't do for you, Costello.
And there's nothing I wouldn't do for you.
I know.
That's the way it is, folks. We just go through life doing nothing for each other.
Yeah, all right. Talk sense, Costello. I just wanted you to be sure. To behave yourself tonight, because the Andrews sisters are coming over, and you've got to be careful how you handle those girls.
Yeah.
They have scruples.
I don't care. I've been vaccinated. I can't catch scruples.
No, you dummy. Scruples are not catching. Scruples are principles. Scruples make a girl sweet.
They do?
Sure.
Oh, I bought my girl some of them last night.
You bought your girl some scruples?
Yeah, I got a banana split with 3 scruples of ice cream.
Oh. You idiot.
Banana!
No. Look, ice cream doesn't come in scruples. Ice cream comes in scoops.
I thought chickens come in scoops. Chicken scoops.
Nah.
That one later, Nate.
Oh, Costello, scruples have nothing to do with chickens.
Then how did the Andrews sisters get them?
They didn't get them. A person doesn't get scruples. Scruples are a good trait. Now, do you know what scruples are?
Yes, sir. When I turned in my Chevy for a Plymouth, they were scruples.
No, what? What has exchanging your Chevy for a Plymouth got to do with scruples?
Well, everybody said it was a good trait.
Oh, let's forget about the scruples.
I don't want to forget them. Abby, you said the Andrews sisters had scruples.
That's right.
Did you ever see them?
No, certainly not.
Then how do you know they got them?
Look, Costello, when I say the girls have scruples, I don't mean they have anything wrong with them. Scruples are a trait, and a trait is part of one's character. And you can't see a person's character, yet you know it's there.
Oh, when you say they have scruples, you don't mean there's anything wrong with them. Scruples are a trait, and a trait is a part of a character, and you can't see the character, yet you know it's there.
Nah, you've got it.
I don't even know what I'm talking about.
All right, that's enough. Now, what do you intend to do with the girls here?
Well, I am going to sing for them.
You're going to sing for them?
Yep.
Costello, you know nothing about songs.
Oh.
I'll bet you don't even know Dixie.
I do, too.
All right. What is Dixie?
That's the place where they make all those paper cups.
No. I can see you know nothing at all. Look, Lou, if you insist on singing, I'll help you. First, I'll improve your libretto. Soften your crescendo, sharpen your staccato, and smooth your pizzicato.
Okay. Oh, well, you're right. Abbott, will you check my oil and give me 5 gallons of gas?
No, look, please. Now, listen, never mind that. Listen to this. Look, now listen.
Are you going to sing or jump?
Now, wait a minute. me.
What are you doing?
I'm just loosening up. That's all right. Just take it
easy. I thought you were falling apart.
No. Costello, you're just jealous. I've been told that my voice is out of the world.
And I'll bet a lot of people are waiting for you to join it.
No. Would you like to hear me sing in my sweet little Alice blue gown?
Could I have that again?
I said, would you like to hear me sing in my sweet little Alice blue gown?
I'd rather hear you whistle in your pink new nightie.
Oh, no. Costello, you're a doubting fool. Why, in my day as a singer, women threw flowers at my feet. They threw jewelry at my feet. Why? They even threw themselves at my feet.
What have your feet got that you haven't got?
Look, Costello. Just for that last crack, I won't help you.
Well, you won't, huh?
No.
Well, I don't need your help, Abbott. My Uncle Clarence Porter of Big Springs, Texas, he can yodel. He'll teach me to sing because he's a good yodeler.
Wait a minute. Did your Uncle Porter study yodeling?
No, he taught himself. He just drinks a lot of beer and lets his stomach take it from there.
Costello, that's ridiculous. Look, what kind of voice does your Uncle Porter have?
Oh, he's a chiropractic tenor.
A chiropractic tenor?
Yeah, he sings in all the joints.
No, Costello, I'm not interested in your Uncle Porter singing. I lean toward the classical music.
What classical music?
Well, for instance, Beethoven's first, Mozart's second, Brahms' third.
Just a minute, Abbott.
Now,
you ain't going to pull that stuff on me trying to ring in a whole new team, huh?
No. What?
Yes,
team?
You are, brother.
Nah, what team?
Mozart's second, Beethoven's first.
All I said was Beethoven's first, Mozart's second.
You're nuts, Abbott. Everybody knows who's on first and what's on second, and I don't know who's on third.
Get him out of here.
Lovely Connie Haynes sings for her Camel fans tonight the hit song from Central Park, Close as Pages in a Book.
We'll be close as pages in a book, my love and I. So close we can share a single look, share every sigh. So close that before I hear your laugh, my laugh breaks through, and when a tear misty too, for a dream won't come tumbling to the ground. We'll hold them fast, darling, as the strongest book is bound. We're bound to last.
Now, Costello, you must be on your good behavior tonight. Now, do you know what to do when the Andrews sisters get here?
Oh, yeah. I'll try and make a date with them.
Oh, no. You'll do nothing of the kind. Besides, I know those girls, and you wouldn't get to first base.
No, just give me 5 minutes, and I'll be sliding into second. Come in.
Ah, good evening, gentlemen. My name is Melonhead. Better known as Cassava J. Melonhead.
You know, you look familiar. Didn't I see your head on a pushcart? Hey, Abbott!
Hey! Please, don't ever say hey. I have hay fever, and every time I hear any word with hay in it, I sneeze. Hey, oops.
All right.
I said it myself.
Right. That's enough.
Remember, Costello, a certain word makes this man sneeze. Have you got that?
I got it all over me.
Now, Mr. Melonhead. Mr. Melonhead, what's your business?
Sir, I'm an attorney at law representing the Andrews sisters. Now, 3 weeks ago, April the 5th, 1945, on this program, you had the Andrews brothers.
Oh, listen, don't talk to me about those guys. I hate them.
You what?
I hate them.
Hey, you said it again.
I said it again.
I'm awfully sorry.
Hey, Abbott, the dam is run for the hills! Hey, Abbott, run down to the bank.
Oh, but you have no money in the bank.
Who needs money? Get me some blotters.
Quiet, Costello. What were you saying, Mr. Melonhead?
Sir, I said that 3 weeks ago you had the Andrews brothers on this program, and in so doing, you did deliberately and with malice aforethought cause, create, and effect a libel against my clients, the Andrews sisters, hereinafter known as the plaintiffs.
You mean they changed their name to the Plaintiff Sisters?
No. You dummy, he means that the Andrews sisters are suing us for slander. We need a lawyer.
Ah, permit me to present myself, gentlemen. I am a lawyer. Now, what seems to be your trouble?
You just told us what the trouble was.
Yes, but that was when I was representing the Andrews sisters. Now, as your lawyer, I see things differently. The first thing I'll do is keep you out of jail with a writ of habeas corpus.
Just in the doorway of it! Here it comes!
I stopped it.
Thank you. Double-crossed me again, brother.
I'm sorry, Mr. Costello. I just can't help it.
Well, you don't have to chew licorice.
Oh, I'm sorry. Gentlemen, where can we talk this matter over?
Well, we can get together tonight at my new colonial home.
Costello, your new home isn't colonial, it's Spanish.
Well, I'm no dope. I'm not going to say hacienda.
Hey!
Will you get out of here, Melonhead? You can't be our lawyer. How can you handle both sides of the case?
My dear boy, I have a split personality, understand? A split personality. Now, here, take this pen and sign right here, and I'll start work on your case at once.
Mr. Melonhead, I think you dropped your pen.
Whoops, so I did. Well, I'll just pick it up.
Now, whoa! Don't look now, Melonhead, but I think you split your personality.
Well, I'll be suing you, gentlemen. Good day.
It was you who brought those Andrews brothers over here. Now, the Andrews sisters are suing us.
Oh, don't worry, Abbott. When they get here, I'll make love to them and square the whole thing.
Oh, you're going to make love to three girls? You know what will happen to you?
Sure, it's the same as when you make love to one girl. Only I'll get slapped three times.
Oh, come yes, in.
The Andrews sisters.
Costello, it's the Andrews sisters.
Ooh! Aha! So there you are, you five-gallon jughead.
Abbott, I think she means me.
Quiet, Costello. I'll handle this. Ladies, you must forgive Costello for his mistakes. After all, it's not his fault that he's a dumb jerk.
Well, whose fault is it?
Oh, this dame is dopier than me.
Listen, Costello, we're suing you for $10,000.
Miss Patty, I'm sure we can make some kind of a deal. Suppose Costello and I appear in your next picture. What about that?
Well, I don't know. What can Costello do? He doesn't look like an actor to me.
Is that so? Well, I was born in a theater, and it cost my father 15 cents extra.
What for? What for, Costello? What for?
Huh?
I say, what for?
Well, the stork dropped me in a load seat. You're getting him too fast now.
Girls, Costello's a pretty good dancer.
Oh, yes, I can kick way over my head.
Well, kick it over here and we'll get you a new one.
You know I can sing, too? I sang with Frank Sinatra a few weeks ago.
Sure, I remember. We were home listening to that show.
Yeah, that's right. And when you sang, Costello, why, my canary climbed down out of her cage and threw herself at the cat.
Mr. Costello, I think your voice is just too anti-divine.
Okay, this kid is right up my alley, brother.
Listen, kids, if you want to, we'll call off the lawsuit and let Costello be in our picture.
Well, that's wonderful. Costello, now we...
Just a minute, Adam.
Not what?
Just a minute. Miss Patty, I'm a fair man. I want this to be a square deal. I must insist on one condition.
Well, what's that?
I'll appear in one of your pictures if you'll promise not to appear in any of mine.
Well, that sounds fair to me.
Oh, this kid's a lulu. Oh.
Get him out of here!
While our heroes Abbott and Costello were on their way to the studio to appear in the Andrews Sisters picture, our lovely guest stars sing for our Camel audience, "I'm Beginning to See the Light."
Much for moonlit skies. I never winked back at fireflies. But now that the stars are in your eyes, I'm beginning to see the light. I never went in for afterglow or candlelight on the mistletoe. But now when you turn the lamp down low, I'm beginning to see the light. Used to ramble through the park, shadow boxing in the dark. Then you came and caused a spark. That's a four-alarm fire now. I never made love by lantern shine. I never saw rainbows in my wine. But now that your lips are burning mine, I'm beginning to see the light. Shadow boxing in the dark. Then you came and caused a spark. That's
back to Bud Abbott and Lou Costello.
Well, Costello, here we are at the studio. Hey, look over there. That's that great Russian producer, Kartuni Technikolovich.
Aha! New actors, eh? You, fat boy, stand where you are. Don't move. Now turn slowly around. Now move. Get out of here!
But, Mr. Technikolovich, we're Abbott and Costello, and we're here to appear in the Andrews Sisters picture.
Yes, sir, Mr. Technikolovich. I'm a pretty good actor.
Yes?
Yes, sir.
What pictures was you in?
I don't like to brag, but did you see the picture of Dorian Gray?
I certainly did.
Don't you think it was hung a little crooked? Must have made Oscar Wilde.
Well, there you are, boys. Come with me. We're just about to start the picture, and you boys will be co-stars.
Yeah, but I think we're making a mistake. When this picture is over, it'll have to accentuate the positive and eliminate negative.
No, never mind that, Costello. When do we start, Miss Andrews?
Shh. They're going to shoot a scene now.
Well, that scene is shot. Let's have another one. Andrew sisters, we're all ready on the set.
Oh, this is our director, Mr. Cliff Nazaro. Cliff, could you use these two boys in our picture?
Yes, I think so. I need a lover and a stunt man.
Well, I'm a lover.
And I'm stunted. Now, wait a minute, Abbott. You're no lover.
No. What do you mean? When I come on the screen, women sit up and notice me.
Oh, yeah? Women who notice you are too old to sit up.
Oh, Cliff, we're wasting time. Why don't you explain the scene to the boys?
All right. Now, boys, this is a very simple scene.
Yes, sir.
The camera catches Patty and Abbott in an embrace. Costello, you come into the room, and Abbott, you walk over to the centerpiece, bring out the faucets, put your saddle process vein, and decapitate the sauce together with the Murphy Selvin.
Now, how can Abbott do that to me? Do I let him get away with that, brother?
Look, you don't stand for it. You grab Patty in your arms, and as you grab it lightly through the faucet, don't reach up too high to bubble said. Just pull down the castle with a mess of a telebrade and bring the faucet steadily to a heated. Does that paint a picture for you?
Yeah, but you smeared it down the middle a little.
Why don't you pay attention? He's directing you.
Costello, I want you to know that you can insult our director.
Absolutely not. After all, I just told you to decapitate the frost, not Delphine, or business class with him with Serenade. I just want you to cap the girl, pull her to the Sassarides, all the business with the several Labradoris, Serenades, and every horse. That I know what I'm saying.
You and nobody else!
Costello, there you go again insulting him. I can't understand you.
You can't understand me! Can you understand him?
Oh, what's the matter with you, Costello? Can't you take direction? Mr. Nazaro is a famous director.
Yes. You mean to tell me you never saw Gone with a Twist of Snuffermurder? And for whom the bells hold, the castle built everything for them?
I never saw them, but I saw Guadalcanal Didit.
You mean Guadalcanal Dit?
No, Didit. I seen it twice.
Oh.
Didit.
Yeah, all right. Will you stop that, please?
Well, let's get back to the scene, Cliff. Mr. Costello was just about to make love to me.
All right, Patty. Now, Costello, look. Listen once more. You fall in love with Patty and propose to her. So it isn't just a question of grabbing the horse and giving her that little cap to the rest of them. You grab her in the capstan, lift up the solomon, and go to the cedar retreat. Don't you agree with me?
Yeah, but what about the children?
Oh, come on. He didn't mention any children. Come on.
I know. He could have. I don't know what the guy's talking about.
Now, listen, Fatty. I've got a reputation.
The rich!
I've got a reputation. Now, listen, Fatty. I've got a reputation, and I don't have to stand for this, because 7 years ago, when I first became a director, I stirred force to the Mallory, the Held Belgrade, pulled force the picture that was the greatest Stalafried, and I'll do it, too.
That's right, and he means every word of it.
Look, folks, I realize I lost my head, and there's just one thing I'd like to say. Curtis.
Gee, I'm glad he said that. He's a nice fellow.
Yes, he certainly is, Costello. Just think, after the way you treated him, why, he was big enough to walk back and say, Curtis.
And that means a lot, too.
Yes, Lou. But what have you got to say? Oh, what can you say after Fritas?
Fritas is a word.
Listen, Lou. If you hadn't been so frantic when he came into Thralden and Clisophate, he wouldn't be so Palestine.
Palestine? What does he want from me?
What does he want from you? Why, you've hurt his feelings. Why, at this very minute, he may be outside Gylfending.
No. No, not Gylfending.
Yes.
No! Abbott, come on, quick. We haven't got a minute to lose.
Where are we going?
Come on, we're going outside and Gylfend with him.
Ah, yeah.
And now we bring you Lou Costello and the Andrews Sisters in a special disarrangement of Sonny Boy.
When there are gray skies.
What? Don't you mind in the least?
I don't mind the gray skies.
What will I do to them?
You'll make them blue.
What's my name?
Sonny Boy.
What will friends do to you?
Friends may forsake me.
And what will you let them do?
Let them all forsake me.
And who will you still have in the end?
I'll still have you.
What's my name?
Sonny Boy.
Where am I sent from?
You're sent from heaven.
Have I any special valuation?
And I know your worth.
What will I make?
You made a heaven.
For who right here on what?
For me right here on earth.
God bless me!
When I'm old and gray, dear.
Do you want me to promise something?
Promise you won't stray, dear.
Give me a good reason.
I need you so.
What's my name?
Sonny.
Folks, be sure to tune in next week for another great Abbott and Costello show brought to you by Camel Cigarettes. The Andrews Sisters appeared by arrangement with the Nash Kelvinator Company. The Abbott and Costello show for Camel Cigarettes will be back at this very same time next week. Don't miss it.
From April of 1945, there's Bud Abbott and Lou Costello with special guest stars, the Andrews Sisters. In a moment, Robert Taylor starring in The House in Cypress Canyon, in a tale calculated to keep you in suspense as yesteryear continues.
You're listening to listener-supported Swing Street Radio. Swing Street Radio, where the big bands swing. The sounds of the golden age of radio continue with Yesteryear.
Suspense was radio's greatest mystery anthology and thrilled millions of listeners for almost two decades. Widely recognized as one of the first series in the history of broadcasting, Suspense won the prestigious Peabody Award and reigned as both a critical success and a ratings powerhouse. Suspense first hit the airwaves in 1940 as an installment of CBS's Forecast summer series. The debut broadcast was directed by the legendary Alfred Hitchcock. On today's program, Hollywood great Robert Taylor stars in one of Suspense's most unusual scripts, one that breaks several of producer-director William Spear's cardinal rules against supernatural and occult themes. Taylor was a last-minute replacement for Suspense stalwart Joseph Cotten, who was originally scheduled to star in this episode. The House in Cypress Canyon begins as a lighthearted comment on the post-World War II housing shortage in Los Angeles, but the mood swiftly changes when wolves howl and a mysterious locked closet starts to bleed. From December of 1946, it's The House in Cypress Canyon, starring Robert Taylor as James A. Woods and Kathy Lewis as Ellen Woods, in a tale calculated to keep you in suspense here on Yesteryear.
Suspense. Tonight, Roma Wines bring you Robert Taylor in The House in Cypress Canyon.
As Roma Wines bring you Robert Taylor, star of Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer's Undercurrent, in a remarkable tale of
suspense.
Merry Christmas, Jerry. How's the real estate business?
Kind of early with your greeting, aren't you, Sam?
Well, I got to get them in sometime. I may not see you again until next Christmas.
This real estate racket gets any crazy, I'll be dead by next Christmas. I'm glad you could get up here, though, Sam.
What's on your mind, Jerry?
You'll probably shoot me when you hear it, Sam, because I'm probably nuts. But doggone it, you're a detective and you're my pal, and I just had to tell somebody.
Well, you sound like it's serious.
That's just it. I don't know what it is, Sam, but... Now, listen, you know we're agents for a group of houses up in Cypress Canyon. Mm-hmm. Those places that were started before the war never got finished.
Oh, yeah.
All I got in were the foundations, just concrete and a couple of beams. Well, they've been finished now. In fact, I'm putting up the for rent on the last of them today.
What do you want? Police protection from the mob?
Listen, Sam, this house that I'm talking about, it's got a number now, 2256. But before, when the men went back to work on it about 3 months ago, well, it just started when the foreman on the job brought me a shoebox that he'd found up on a beam. And this box had a manuscript in it, a story, kind of, all written out.
Yeah.
Well, he gave me the thing. I read it. I didn't think much about it. I put it in my desk. But the other day, and I happened to drive by there, I saw the number on the house and what the house looked like. I thought of this manuscript. And, well, I don't like it, that's all. There's something funny about it.
What's funny about it?
Well, mind you, this thing was found in an unfinished house in Cypress Canyon. House that was only just started building.
All right.
Well, listen, Sam, I want to read it to you if you got the time, and you'll see what I mean.
All right, shoot.
Well, here's how it begins. To whom it may concern. My reasons for setting down on paper what follows here will be abundantly clear.
What follows here will be abundantly clear to anyone into whose possession it may fall. First, let me say that I'm a very ordinary person. My name is James A. Woods. I'm 35 years old. By profession, a chemical engineer. My wife, Ellen, was a school teacher when I met and married her in Indiana 7 years ago. There's nothing in the past life of either one of us to suggest remotely any cause or reason for the dreadful thing that has invaded our lives. Our married life has been in no way different from that of millions of other average, reasonably happy, and congenial families. 3 months ago, I was ordered by my firm to take charge of a rather minor project in Los Angeles, Hollywood to be exact. The order was a sudden one. There'd been no time to secure accommodations, and conditions being what they are, the inevitable result was that until day before yesterday, we'd been living in the cramped quarters of one of those characteristic California motels. Needless to say, most of our spare time had been devoted to a search for something more permanent and comfortable, but the fruits of these efforts had been, financially and in every other way, a geometrical progression of discouragement. Until last Saturday afternoon, only 4 days before Christmas, we were driving into town on our way to a movie when Ellen saw it.
Jim, look.
What?
That sign in front of that real estate office.
Oh, yeah.
But
yeah.
Don't you see what it says? For rent, furnished, two-bedroom house, close in, immediate occupancy.
Yeah, uh-huh.
Aren't you going to stop?
Oh, Ellen, you know what a sign like that would mean, right out in plain sight in front of a real estate office.
Oh, yeah, but Jim...
Either they want $600 a month...
We'll never know until we ask.
If it's any good at all, there are probably 50 people fighting for it right back there now.
Well, honey, there's no harm in trying. Now, is there?
You really want to go back?
Oh, it's probably foolish, but what can we lose?
Okay.
Oh, darling, come on, cheer up. How do you know? Maybe our luck's changed. Maybe fate's going to give us a nice new house for a Christmas present.
Come in. Oh, we're sorry to bother you, but we just happened to see that for rent sign outside.
Oh, yeah, I hung it outside just this minute.
Is the house available?
Why, sure it is.
Let me introduce myself. My name is James A. Woods, and this is my wife, Ellen.
How to do? Wow. Looks like it's fixing to rain.
Yes, so it does, doesn't it? Well, it was one of those things. The real estate agent had just been authorized to rent the place by mail that morning, and he'd hardly had time to look at it himself and put up his sign when we drove up. It was just an ordinary little California house about halfway up Cypress Canyon, number 2256. Just an ordinary, undistinguished little house. The agent didn't know much about it. Construction on it had been stopped by the war, and it had just been completed and furnished lately. been vacant while somebody's estate was being settled, and now it was owned by a bank in Sacramento. Of course, we didn't
care about it. Got this key in the mail along with the authorization to rent. Only one there is, because you can have duplicates made. It seems to stick a little. Oh, there it is.
Doesn't sound as though that door had ever been opened.
Well, a little oil on the hinges will fix that, all right.
Oh, sure.
Now here's your living room. Furniture's a little dusty, of course. You got to expect that. It's good furniture, though, you see? Benson Brothers.
Yes,
Now, over here's a little den. Panel, you see? Radio, fireplace. Really a very attractive little room, particularly for a man.
Yep.
Now, the bedroom's off the living room here. Everything's all on one floor, you understand? It's quite nice, I think.
Yes.
You can see you get the morning sun here. There's a view of the canyon through these front windows. You got cross ventilation.
That's about all there was to it. It wasn't the best place in the world. It was small and badly built, but what would you have done? We took it with as little inspection as that. It was the Saturday before Christmas. And the very same evening, we were struggling up the steps from the road with suitcases and boxes and armloads of clothes and all the endless bric-a-brac that people collect and never know they have until they move. Ellen began unpacking, and I began moving things around and taking the worst of the pictures off the wall, doing all the little things everybody does when they move into a new place and try to give it something of their own.
Don't be such a sourpuss. You know, it's a roof over our heads for Christmas. That's more than we ever thought we'd get, isn't it? Now, what in the world are we going to do with those two pictures?
Why don't we just leave them where they are?
Jim, we can't. They're too awful.
Well, all right, put them in the closet then.
I can't. Both the closets are jammed full.
No, I mean the other one in the little alcove off the den. At least there's a door there. I suppose it's a closet.
Yeah.
I don't know.
If that isn't a commentary on the housing problem, huh? A woman moving into a house without even knowing where all the closets are. Take the pictures down, will you, honey? Bring them in here.
Okay.
All right. Guess you'll have to help me with this door. I can't get it open.
Let me see it. Of course you can, silly. It's locked. Where are those keys we found in the desk?
Here they are.
Nope. Not this one. Sure, this one won't work. Nope. Feels like an awful solid door for a closet.
Oh, and that's one solid door in the house.
Nope, this one won't do it either. Well, we'll just have to get a locksmith up here on Monday. I'll put the pictures behind the desk, okay?
Yeah, all right. Jim, if you could just help me move this armchair, huh?
Oh, Ellen, will you let it go until tomorrow? You know what time it is?
Oh, but, honey, I'd like to get the place looking just a little bit.
Yeah, but it's almost midnight. In fact, it's exactly...
What was that?
Tomcat, I guess, out in the brush somewhere.
Sounded near. Oh, hope that doesn't go on all night.
Well, there's much we can do about it. Come on, Ellen, I'm dead tired.
All right, Jim, all right.
Where'd you put the toothpaste, honey?
It's right in the medicine cabinet.
Oh, yeah.
Jim, we ought to get some firewood tomorrow. You know, a fire in that living room would make all the difference
we
in the world.
Can't. Sunday.
Well, Monday, then. Jim, I think red curtains are what we need, don't you?
Mm-hmm.
You know, just at least for the living room. Anyway, the ones in there now have just got to come down.
Yeah, I suppose they do.
What do you think of red?
Well, I guess it's all...
Jim...
Some tomcat.
Jim, it sounded in the house.
Oh, now, how could it be in the house, Ellen? We've been over every inch of the house.
Except that closet.
Now, how could a cat or anything else be in a closet that's been locked up for over a year?
Oh, I don't know.
It's probably under the house. A wildcat or a mountain lion or something. I hear they have them in California.
Jim, I don't like
it. Well, neither do I like it, but there's nothing we can do about it tonight.
Well, maybe we ought to call somebody, the police or some neighbor.
Oh, don't be silly, Ellen. You act like a kid. Come on, let's go to bed, huh?
Well, all right, I suppose it is silly. Jimmy, did you lock the door?
Yeah. Can I turn out the lights now?
Yeah, all right.
Good night, Ellen. Sleep tight.
Good night, Jim.
I don't know what time it was, perhaps an hour, perhaps only a half hour later. My mind was in that hazy borderland between sleep and a dream that's still part of consciousness. Then I was awake. Ellen, are you all right?
Yes.
Did you have a nightmare or something?
No. I heard it too.
Well, that didn't sound like any cat.
Put on the light.
Yeah.
It seemed to be... Out there, Jim, in the house somewhere.
I'm going to look into this.
Jim, you be careful.
Come on. Where's the
Where's my shotgun?
In the den, I think. Jim.
What?
There's something wet.
What? Wet?
Running from under the closet door. Sticky.
Ellen, don't. Don't touch it.
I had to. Jim, it's blood.
For Suspense, Roma Wines are bringing you Robert Taylor in The House in Cypress Canyon. Roma Wines' presentation tonight in radio's outstanding theater of thrills, Suspense.
You're listening to listener-supported Swing Street Radio. Swing Street Radio, where the big bands swing. The sounds of the golden age of radio continue with Yesteryear.
And now, Roma Wines bring back to our Hollywood soundstage Robert Taylor as James A. Woods, with Kathy Lewis as his wife Ellen, in the house in Cypress Canyon. A tale well calculated to keep you in suspense.
It cannot be too difficult to understand from the foregoing why I've taken the pains to set down in writing the events related here. To find in one's newly rented house a closet which cannot be opened is in itself certainly no great cause for alarm. But to be awakened in the stillness of the night by unearthly cries within that house, to find oozing from under that closet door something that is unquestionably blood, that's another matter. Perhaps others might have been braver than we. Suffice it only to say that we got out of the house in something very close to a panic, and only returned when we had the moral support of two stalwart Los Angeles policemen.
You just moved in here, you say?
That's right, officer. You can see we're still unpacking.
And the place has been empty right along before that?
Yeah, I don't know much about that part of it. You could check all that with a real estate agent, though.
Well, where is this closet?
Oh, it's right in here, officer. And the blood is...
Where? Where's the blood?
Jim...
Officer, I swear to you, there was blood on the floor less than an hour ago. I saw it.
Uh-huh.
It was running out from under that door. We heard that noise, and we got up, and then we saw it. The door was locked.
Locked, huh?
Oh, no.
Well, it seems to be all right now.
Hey, you folks aren't trying to be funny, are you?
Isn't there anything in it?
No, ma'am, there is not.
Look, officer, we're reputable people. You can call my firm. They'll tell you all about me.
There's nothing wrong with this closet. Walls are solid. No trap doors.
If you think I'm lying...
I didn't say that, mister. Oh, you probably did hear some sort of a noise, and you got a little panicky, and...
What about the blood? It got on my hand.
It isn't there now, is it?
Yes.
Where?
I feel it.
Now, you folks just take it easy. You know, you're liable to hear all kinds of noises up in these canyons at night. You're from the east, you say?
Yeah, I'm sorry, officer.
Ah, that's all right, that's all right. If you have any real trouble, call on us anytime.
All right.
Well, good night.
Good night.
Good night. Hey, you ought to have this door fixed. That's enough to scare you.
Yeah, we're going to have it fixed. Didn't say much about it after that. There wasn't much that could be said. The next day, I went down to a lot and bought a little Christmas tree and some trimmings, and we tried to pretend we were cheerful, but there was an uneasiness between us that had never been there before. Ellen seemed tired and listless. Several times during the day, I noticed her washing her hands with a brush, scrubbing the one that had touched the blood. That night, we each took a sleeping pill and went to bed. Sometime after midnight, when I was suddenly wide awake and staring into the darkness. In some way, I knew at once and instinctively what had awakened me. Ellen was not in her bed nor in the room. The nameless thing I feared gripped at my heart until I could scarcely breathe. I opened the bedroom door and started through the house, putting on every light that I could find. There was not much to search, but I searched thoroughly. The living room, the kitchen, bathroom, den, even the garage. And all the time, the dread of looking where I knew at last I must look for I think I knew from the very first time where I'd find her. It must have been a full minute that I stood before that closet door. Then I opened it. She stood there rigid, her arms at her sides, her fingers extended like claws. Her hair was over her face, her eyes stared out of it. Her lips were drawn back in a grin like an animal at bay. For a moment, I was frozen with the horror of it. I stretched out my hand. Very deliberately, she turned her head and sunk her teeth until they met into the flesh of my forearm. I'd raised my hand to strike at her, but already she'd relaxed her hold and gone utterly limp. She would have fallen unless I'd caught her. I carried her into the bedroom and laid her on the bed. Strangely, at that moment, my only thought was how I might revive her. Until I saw that it was not a faint, but a sleep that she'd fallen into. Sleep as deep and heavy as though she'd been drugged. And so I left her. But for me, that night, there was no sleep. Yes, Ellen?
Oh. What are you doing up so early?
Oh, I got a little restless, went out to make some coffee.
Oh, I had the most wonderful sleep. And I feel so rested.
Do you?
Mm-hmm. Jim.
What?
What's the matter with your arm?
Oh, I just hurt it.
Well, honey, it's terribly swollen. Let me see it.
No, it's all right, Ellen.
Oh, it isn't all right. You've got to see Dr. Wesley right away.
Sure, I will.
No,
I will.
You promise me, Jim, that you'll go the first thing this morning. How'd it happen?
Why, there was a dog.
A dog?
Yeah, I heard him trying to chew through the screen door. I went out to chase him away, and he bit me.
Well, you mean there's all that racket, and I didn't even wake up?
No, Ellen, you didn't even wake up. It was clear to me that Ellen knew nothing of what had transpired the night before. I went to my office that morning and made a pretense of going over routine business, if only to restore my mind to some semblance of calm by the sight and sound of common, familiar things. Pain in my arm had become a persistent, dull throbbing. I made a late appointment with Dr. Wesley. He treated my arm with something of an arched eyebrow, and he said,
"Well, I've never seen anything quite like it before. That is such a rapid onset of infection."
It was dark when I left his office. I hadn't realized it was so late. Driving home, my car seemed sluggish until I saw the needle on the dashboard and realized that I was pushing it to the utmost of its speed. That I was racing home to prevent something before it was too late, before the darkness had conspired against me. Somehow I already knew with certainty that it was the darkness and the night that I had to fear. The curves of the canyon seemed endless. And then the cold fear leaped up inside me. My house, too, was dark. I went slowly up the stone steps from the road, looking, praying for some sign of light or life. There was none. The house was empty. Ellen was gone. I looked with the same self-torturing thoroughness. And in that closet, first of all, knowing as I did so that it was hopeless. And so, alone in that empty house, I waited, powerless and helpless now, deadened in thought and will, empty as the house itself, save only for the overwhelming sense of a terrible foreboding. For some time in the early hours of the morning, I snapped on the radio, shortwave. Why? Surely a minor question now. I only know that I did. And then I heard it.
Car 58, car 58, go to Laurel Canyon, the 4,000 block. Report that a man has been injured or attacked. Condition thought to be critical. Ambulance will follow. That is all.
I was there almost before the police, edging my way through the little crowd, staring down at the man lying there in his white uniform under the streetlight.
Yeah, the milkman's poor guy.
I heard him scream, but when I got here, just like this.
Stand back. Please stand back.
Well, you again.
I heard it on the radio. I live just down the road.
Yeah, I remember.
What happened?
Well, take a look. Maybe you can tell us.
was dead. And he was lying on his back. And his throat had been torn out as though by the fangs of some wild animal. It is now Christmas Eve, or rather Christmas morning, for it's a little after midnight. I've been waiting here in the stillness of this empty house for nearly 24 hours, waiting for the end. Already once tonight, I've heard that dreadful wailing cry somewhere in the hills. I've nailed up the closet door, but that I know was childish, useless. My arm is horribly swollen and turning black, but that's nothing. It's another end that I foresee, as surely as other men foresee the rising of the sun. I hear the cry again. It's nearer now. I shall leave these notes in a sealed envelope and put it in a shoebox, in the hope that someone will give credence to these dark and terrible events, if indeed such nameless horrors can ever yield to mortal understanding. As for myself, I feel no longer any fear or even sorrow. Only a desire that the end and the thing that I must do may come soon. And it will be soon, I know. Yes. But there is someone at the door.
Someone at the door. What do you make of it, Sam?
It's quite a yarn. But what of it?
That's what I thought. Now, listen, that's not quite all of it. Huh? Clip to it's a newspaper clip. Listen. Hollywood, December the 26th. Police reported what was apparently a case of murder and suicide in Cypress Canyon sometime in the early hours of the morning. The victims were James A. Woods, a chemical engineer, and his wife, Ellen. Preliminary investigation indicates that Mrs. Woods was killed by the blast of a shotgun in the hands of her husband, who then turned the weapon upon himself. That she fought desperately for her life, however, was evidenced by the disorder of the room and the severe lacerations inflicted upon her husband about the neck and arms. This is the second tragedy to be reported in Cypress Canyon within 24 hours, the other being the unexplained death of Frank Polanski, a milkman.
Well, no such murders or whatever they were ever occurred, if that's what's worrying you. The clipping. Have those things printed up, you know.
No, it's not that, Sam. That story was found in an unfinished house in Cypress Canyon. No number, no nothing, just a framework.
Uh-huh.
Now that house is finished. When I drove by it today, well, that's what stopped me, Sam, because it all fits. Now that it's finished, it is the house in the story, the same construction, the same vines and creepers on the lawn, even the same number.
So what, a guy who knows roughly what this house is going to be like writes a yarn and loses it or something?
Did he know the place was going to be listed for rental today, the Saturday before Christmas?
Oh, Jerry, coincidence. Too bet you find the guy next door is a ghost story writer or something, and he's been wondering for a year what happened to that thing he wrote.
Okay, coincidence. I'm sorry I bothered you, Sam.
Don't be silly. I liked it. It's a good yarn. That the for rent sign you were talking about?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'm going to put it up outside now.
Uh-huh. Well, so long, Jerry, and Merry Christmas again.
Yeah, well, thanks, Sam. I guess I was kind of silly, all right, huh?
Listen, when a guy named whatever it is, Woods, with a wife named Ellen, comes in to rent that place from you, then you can start worrying.
Yeah. Well, so long, Sam.
So long, Jerry.
Come in.
Oh, we're sorry to bother you, but we just happened to see that for rent sign outside.
Yeah, I hung it out just this minute.
Is the house available?
Oh, sure it is.
Let me introduce myself. My name is James A. Woods, and this is my wife, Ellen.
How do? Well, looks like it's fixing to...
Yes, it does, doesn't it? Now Now, Ken, who's all set to star on Suspense next Thursday?
It's that very wonderful actress and wonderful girl, Miss Susan Peters.
Well, I'll certainly make it a point to listen. And before I go, I'd like to thank this really great company of actors who have played with me tonight, and particularly Kathy Lewis, who played Ellen.
Thank you, Bob.
This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
From December of 1946, it's been Robert Taylor starring in The House in Cypress Canyon on this rendition of Suspense from Yesteryear. That's all we have time for on today's program, but we're back with you again next week at this very same time, so let's make it a date and together enjoy more of the best of the golden age of radio right here on Yesteryear. Till next time, I'm Craig Roberts. So long.
Radio, remember. We'd sit and close our eyes and use our imagination. Comedy, mystery, a fireside chat. Together we sat, listening nightly to our favorite shows. Radio, I miss you. Sodio, vodio, dodio, do.
KSSR-DB San Francisco, where the big bands swing.